Checkpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Over the weekend, the city of Tampa unveiled findings about community opinions of the city's police force. Mayor Jane Castor responded to results of Tampa's community policing workshop. The survey was conducted and results were announced by a USF professor who we'll hear from this hour, as well as the mayor. And near the end of the show, we'll take your calls to find out what you think. Here's the number if you'd like to write it down, 813-239-9663. Anytime during the show, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name and tell us where you're calling from if you do text. The results of the survey of USF students, members of the community, and police officers showed that some people don't think the Tampa police are held accountable. Some people think the department needs better training, and some Tampa residents don't trust police officers. We'll hear much more detail about these results during the next hour. The survey was conducted by USF Associate Criminology Professor Dr. Brianna Fox and by the Mayor's Community Task Force on Policing. Later on in the show, we'll hear her results and we'll get reaction from Mayor Jane Castor. But first, we'll hear from Dr. Fox. Here she is talking about how she did the community policing workshop study on the Tampa Police Department.
For those of you who weren't with us in the past task force meetings, I'd like to review what we've done previously. I'm really starting to sound like a professor here, aren't I? But I guess to get started, we had five pillars from the 21st century policing identified through President Obama's task force in 2015. So we looked at five of these. They were building trust and legitimacy, policy and oversight, technology and social media, community policing and crime reduction, and training and education. We also added an additional element of funding and resources for the police because this is, of course, relevant given today's recent events. So these are the issues that I'm going to be talking about today because they're the ones we focused on with the task force and what we really wanted to address here. Okay, so in terms of our methodology, we had a sample of about 40 invited community members and 10 TPD officers. I'd like to note, of course, that this is not representative of either the entire Tampa community or TPD. From that group, we had a 30-person sample at session one, where we took some anonymous online survey data, and we used that as our baseline. You know, what is the community feeling? What are the perceptions of police relating to these five different elements of the Obama Task Force on Policing and funding and resources for police? But to help increase our generalizability and get a better comparison group of how relevant and applicable this is beyond our task force members, I also included survey data from USF students in TPD service zip codes. This was after May 25th, which is when George Floyd was killed. And I wanted to make sure that group was added just to further increase our generalizability. We had a sample of 115, which is a rather large group. So from this information, we were able to add additional qualitative data. And this qualitative data was helpful because it helped understand more of the whys and hows and deeper understanding of the survey, you know, quantitative statistical metrics. We looked at recurring themes through reading transcripts and hosting these focus group discussions. We wanted to also look at quotes that were most emblematic of the themes that we found. And we put those together for demonstrative purposes today. And those, I should note, were from both the community members and the police officers, while the quantitative data from the online surveys were just from the community members. Before I get into our results and findings, I just wanted to share a few considerations. The first one being that evidence-based policy and programs in policing were considered. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, these policies and programs, which have been shown to be more effective and more efficient, more fair compared to non-evidence-based practices, particularly in policing, were utilized. just as you wouldn't want to take any medicine that hasn't been scientifically tested and evaluated, we also wanted to make sure that we weren't recommending policies and programs that haven't shown to be effective in prior research. Second, you know, while this is an incredible effort, it's important to remember that long-term change takes considerable time, energy, and support. So we want to make sure that there's a continued engagement, that people follow up and stay, you know, within the research, you know, efforts. And of course, that there's process compliance, that we're assuming that the programs will work, but we need to test that through evaluations, and making sure that interest and engagement are maintained on all fronts. Finally, I just want to say that these findings that I'm going to present are intended to help address the task force members' concerns, but in no means are they meant to be a, you know, panacea or cure-all for everything that could be possibly, you know, wrong. I like the quotes, and I say it often to my students. You know, Voltaire said, "Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good." And President Obama said, "You know, better is good." So I really believe that all of this work is addressing issues and will make us better overall. So just to give you guys a bit of information about our survey sample, as you can see, we had a group of community members that were predominantly Black and African American, and that's 65.4%. When you compare that to the college students, they were about half white or Caucasian. So we did have some variation there. And the community sample that we used had far more education. They were 44% had an advanced degree, while obviously the undergraduate students had not yet earned a bachelor's degree, or they were they just earned it and they were working on an additional degree. The community sample also had higher income compared to the college students. Just one last thing I wanted to note here. The community sample, 92% on average were the victim of a previous crime. And obviously that is incredibly high compared to other things I've seen in research. And when you look at the types of crimes that they were victim of, 16 said that they were victims of property crimes, but you can see that violent crime and sex offenses were also common. And then when we asked if they knew somebody was a crime victim, you can see 12 out of the 30, so almost half, had said that they known somebody who was the victim of the violent crime. So obviously that was very important for us in terms of contextualizing some of the findings here.
That's USF Associate Criminology Professor Dr. Brianna Fox talking about the Tampa Mayor's Community Task Force on Policing and how she conducted the survey. You're listening to 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan, host of WMNF's Midpoint Monday. It's 12:14 in the afternoon, and later in the show we'll take your calls. But right now we're going to continue with Dr. Fox talking about what her survey found out about when they surveyed the police officers, the USF students, and members of the Tampa community about Tampa police. And here we're going to hear what the survey found out about how people in the community feel about the Tampa police when it comes to issues like trust, accountability, and social media. Here's Dr. Fox.
In terms of our first pillar that was addressed, trust and legitimacy, we asked the task force participants how well TPD was doing in terms of building trust and legitimacy on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is extremely poor and 10 is extremely well. The community member respondents rated TPD on average a 4.7, which is essentially the midpoint of neither doing poorly or well. So to dig deeper into all of this, we looked at, you know, trust in TPD, perceptions of legitimacy, procedural justice, distributive fairness, and other things that were components of trust and legitimacy. You can see that for some, they do particularly, you know, the average at about the midpoint or slightly better. And there's some that are a little bit worse, particularly obligation to obey, which we consider legal compliance, perceptions of quality of treatment and distributive fairness, as well as procedural justice, were lower than I'd like to see. So all of those were, of course, things I wanted to keep my eye on as we went into the focus group discussions. And out of this, you know, the conversation, which took place over, you know, multiple meetings, 4 hours in length, we had long discussions on each of these elements, we identified different themes. The first one was long-standing distrust And, you know, just in general, I would say that the community members, I've highlighted one point of the quote, you know, this came from generation and generation and decades of injustice. That's how they felt. So I think that's important to note. That was the perception, and that was what was really leading into these perceptions of trust and legitimacy. There was also concerns over fairness and fear. One really, I think, emblematic engagement was between an officer and a citizen, where the CPD officer was saying, you know, I also don't want to get pulled over. I understand that annoyance and fear. And the community member said, you know, I'm not afraid of getting pulled over. I'm afraid I won't make it home. And so that also really helped to establish in my mind these feelings of trust and legitimacy. Finally, it seemed like to better our trust in the police and to improve it, the requirement would be through action and accountability. And one thing that we kept hearing was, you know, if there's consequences, then they'll feel, you know, there's more trust, and that until they hold officers accountable, people aren't going to trust them. So that was something that we obviously really wanted to pay attention to. And all of these things really comport with what prior research has found. There was a 2018 article by Professor Tom Locke, and it really exemplifies all of these issues, the obligation to obey, the procedural justice, the perceptions of police, and also that when there's, you know, an issue, an incident, such as back then, what he was writing about was Freddie Gray, and today with George Floyd and Jacob Blake and others, these things really resonate with community members in terms of fairness, fear, distrust, and the need for action and accountability. Okay, moving into policy and oversight. So here we again asked on the scale of 1 to 10, how community members felt about these issues. It was, again, just about the midpoint. But you can see a very sizable distinction in terms of when community members felt that officers were being held accountable for their actions. Most on a scale of 1 to 4 agreed that they were not being held accountable, and that was significantly different from the student sample. Police officers being disciplined when they engage in misconduct, again, you can see that they tended to disagree with that, whereas the student sample did not. So this was something we found big variation in, whereas the previous elements, we did not find big variation between the students and the police, the community sample. So digging into why this may be the case, the first one is, we found that perception is reality. So in terms of policy and oversight, if the policy exists, but the people don't know it, then that perception is reality. That's what they believe to be the case. Additionally, there was this feeling that there shouldn't be double standards, that people in the community are not able to, you know, walk away from misconduct, or even if they get arrested, right? One person said, why do officers get a fresh start yet prison sentences follow us around? So I think that that was really emblematic of this feeling that there needs to be oversight and policies to ensure that accountability is really enacted. Finally, in terms of increasing accountability, there were so many, you know, really meaningful quotes. One I think was meaningful from an officer who said, you know, it's our job. We want to champion the good cops, but then get rid of the bad ones. So you can see, you know, good cops support good cops, and that's what they want on their force as well. Some community members said, how many incidents do they have to let an officer go? And then another officer said, you know, when there's smoke, there's fire. So when you see these repeated incidents of misconduct, it's probably indicating that this is a pattern of behavior, and you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. So I thought all of those were really, really great to help understand policy and oversight. Moving along to pillar 3, technology and social media. Both of these, you know, score around the midpoint, although there was some higher perceptions in terms of social media use. I follow TPD and City of Tampa on Twitter, so I agree that, you know, there is a lot of social media use, but then we wanted to look into, you know, why they may not have scored higher. So one was this issue of authenticity versus publicity. So the idea, you know, we should be genuine when we're posting on social media, sharing everything, not just the good. You know, and I know we may all be guilty of that. We want to post things that make us look good and, you know, humble brags on social media, but that's not all that, especially from a public taxpayer-funded agency that the community wants. So being honest and genuine, including on social media, was really important. Accessibility was also a big issue in terms of having information that's readily available in an easy-to-read format. People are busy. They don't want to spend a lot of time trying to find policies and data, making public record requests. They will trust the information more when it's readily available and right in front of them on an easy-to-access website. So that really came through, making meetings easier to access. I think that this is great. We're streaming this live. And this just makes it easier for the community members to be engaged. Finally, we don't know what we don't know. This I kept hearing over and over and over again as we were sitting through these discussions where someone would say, oh, well, we should do this, or this is a great idea. Why don't we enact this? And people from TPD would say, I think we're already doing that. I just think that it's not known. So I know that, my students always tell me, if it's not on social media, it didn't happen. And that is probably the case here as well, that we only know what we know. And so policies, data, sharing of programs and what's being done at TPD, if that's not out there in the public, we can't expect that then they will know about it.
That's USF Associate Criminology Professor Dr. Brianna Fox talking on Saturday about the Tampa Mayor's Community Task Force on Policing, and she was going through some of the results there. You're listening to 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF's Midpoint Monday. What do you think about this? Later on in the show, we're going to take your calls. You're welcome to email in right now at dj@WMNF.org. But here we're going to hear Dr. Fox continue to talk about the survey results when she surveyed these police officers, these members of the community, and these USF students. And here she'll talk about results like community policing and crime reduction.
Moving on to community policing and crime reduction. So this covers obviously a lot of grounds, but you can see the scores were actually a little bit lower than I would have expected. They scored a 4.4 out of 10 in terms of the community policing element. And to dig into this, why that may be the case, we found that, having a police presence in the neighborhood, people were, generally supportive of that. They thought, there are enough police in their neighborhood. But you can see these items regarding, fear of police and feeling like it was dangerous to interact with police. They scored higher than the students did. So feeling just maybe that there's over-policing in terms of feeling afraid, but as we'll see when we talk about crime reduction, they do feel like the police are being effective in terms of reducing crime. So leading into that, the thing that TPD definitely scored the highest on was crime reduction. There was a lower fear of crime. Even when I have done this research with national samples, they usually score higher on these items than people here in Tampa. So crime reduction was not something that I found people in Tampa were particularly worried about. You can see on average, they scored about as, being fearful of different types of crimes as they were, of a terrorist attack. So that just to put some perspective, I think that's a good thing. This is all good news, but I did want to, contextualize it with the community policing element as well. So this I won't address as much in my findings, but definitely in terms of community policing, we will talk more about. So relating to why there's this feeling of, low perceptions of community policing and more fear of police, we wanted to ask why. What caused this? And one thing we resoundingly heard was people want officers to be guardians, champions of them, to be helpful, to know who's in their community. And I thought one thing an officer said that was particularly helpful was, people know us through traffic stops or, when negative interactions, right? But not from positive interactions that aren't enforcement related. So this officer actually recommended, take time to have a conversation and show people that we're here to help. I think that was exactly what community members said that they were looking for. Also, humanizing the police and the community. We both have to see the humanity in each other. So citizens said, you're people before you're the police, right? You're one of us. And that's exactly true. One thing that I found was, the police officers were feeling like they're they were able to do things that helped, such as, you know, being out in the community, having barbecues, playing basketball, but maybe this wasn't on a widespread enough level that all the community members felt it was occurring. Finally, building relationships. I'm sorry, I have so many words on the slide. I know that you're not supposed to do that, but there were so many great quotes, so I just wanted to put them all up here. One was, you know, we need community policing because it's building relationships and trust. And that relates back to a prior element I raised. Another thing was a community member said they want to know who's patrolling their neighborhood. And this will obviously help with building bonds and making people feel comfortable to come to an officer because they know them, they trust them, and they feel like they're one of them too. So, moving on here for time, training and education. You can see in general, people were pretty comfortable with the amount of training and education that officers received. However, conversely, they thought they could use more. And I think this is something, you know, even the officer said, we can always use more training. So diving into that, what type of training did they want? We looked at quality versus quantity. And I know this is probably an issue everywhere, but specifically with training for police officers, it really seemed like quality makes a difference. If it's, you know, as one person said, garbage training and you get 10 hours of it, it's not going to be as impactful as 1 hour of really great training. Another community member said that, you know, experiential education, so going out there, being in the community, seeing what it's like, being with citizens, you know, that's training in and of itself. And that's high quality training because you get things out of it that you don't get from watching a training video. Also, training is important, but actions are what matter. So they really emphasize that it can't just be, you know, click through training and we watch it and then move on. They really wanted to see the training shine through what officers do. I thought there was a great quote from one of our task force members who said she went on a ride along. And when, you know, this officer she was with was responding to calls, she said, I could see the training in her. So she knew what she was doing and it was her training shining through. And that's the type of thing she wanted to see agency-wide. All right, our last one is regarding the funding and resources for police. So we asked specifically about different types of funding and what police, you know, typically would be requiring funding for. You can see that they didn't oppose additional funding for police. They scored about, you know, just under the midpoint, but there was not a lot of support for giving better weapons, better equipment. It was slightly higher for computers and technology, but I didn't ask, I should have, but we would say, you know, the probably what they would want funding to go to is education, training, and other types of funding because of that supports what they said for other pillars. So getting into this, you know, we asked, well, why, what types of funding do you want? What do you want police to do with the money? One thing that people consistently said was police are being asked to do more, less daily. You know, they're doing more and more every day, but they have less to do it. So I think that this is a really important point. We can't keep asking police to take on, you know, mental health services and to be social workers and to, as one officer or person said, you know, do we want armed police officers responding to loud music calls? Do we want officers responding, you know, when they get calls from parents saying, my 8-year-old won't listen to me? These are the types of things we obviously are concerned about and we don't necessarily need an officer responding to. Finally, there's a very, very clear message that, you know, people wanted police. They need the police. We did ask, you know, what does defunding the police mean to you? And the task force members resoundingly said, you know, if defunding means taking officers away from the street, I don't want that. I need you guys lickety split if I need it. They also said things like, we can't take money away now. Like when we're asking for more training, we're asking for better education, we're asking for more things. We want there to be the money to be able to do that. And then the last quote, which I thought was really just emblematic of this entire theme, was abolishing the police would be a catastrophe. One thing when we asked people, you know, what would it look like if we abolished the police? You know, who would respond to crime? A lot of people said, you know, I wouldn't want that, right? I need the police there to respond, especially if a violent crime occurs.
That's USF Associate Criminology criminology professor Dr. Brianna Fox talking about the Tampa Mayor's Community Task Force on Policing and some of the results. So far we've heard that some community members feel that crime has gone down in Tampa, but Tampa police have a ways to go when it comes to things like trust and accountability. And you're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. You might be listening on WMNF.org or on the WMNF app. I'm the host of WMNF Midpoint Monday, Sean Canan, and we're going to hear the last segment here right now from USF Associate Criminology Professor Dr. Brianna Fox. After that, we're going to hear from the mayor, and then we'll take your calls. But here are the findings of the survey and the recommendations from USF Professor Dr. Fox.
In terms of building trust and legitimacy, we did a lot of research, and I found that, you know, implementing a procedural justice model of policing all the way through the agency, you know, infusing the model in agency culture would definitely be a benefit. Procedural justice is where you aim to build community trust and increase legitimacy by refocusing on carrying out officer duties in a way that is objectively fair, consistent, transparent, reflective of understanding and community concerns, and treats citizens with dignity and respect. So in terms of, you know, what has happened in the past, because I told you all of my recommendations would be evidence-based, here I looked up where other departments have used procedural justice training, and we found consistently procedural justice was associated with higher community trust in police, more cooperation, lower crime rates, fewer arrests, increased legal compliance. And a study by Tom Tyler and colleagues from Yale University found that procedural justice training reduced officer use of force by 6% and citizen complaints by 10% over 2 years. A similar study was done by Emily Owens and colleagues, and they found that officers who received procedural justice training are up to 50% less likely to use force. So these are the reasons why this was one of my findings, and I would also suggest conducting an independent evaluation to assess the long-term effects of this model on our target outcomes, again, to make sure that it's working over time. Next, in terms of increasing transparency, so there was this theme that we wanted to make sure that the public could see what was going on, you know, by knowing what policies were implemented in TPD. So this was a clear, you know, finding. We can put all of the policies online available for public review. In the research, this was found to increase trust, particularly if it was accompanied by plain language summaries. So that's something to consider. Additionally, regularly posting data on stops, offenses, arrests, complaints, and findings, use of force, that would, as prior research has suggested, increase citizens' trust significantly. Just being informed, being able to look it up themselves, not having to make public record requests, all of that just helps to show, and not on a, you know, annual basis, but, you know, more regularly, what's going on in the community, and help them stay in touch and make it readily available and transparent. Next, in terms of policy and oversight, there was a feeling that we could reduce misconduct through accountability. So one thing that we can clearly do is already being planned to being done, which is implementing body-worn cameras. But I would take that a step further and say there should be clear policies on when body cameras are used in terms of when they should be turned on and off, sharing of footage, doing random spot checks of the body-worn camera footage, just even if there isn't a complaint. These types of things have been shown in past research to reduce citizen complaints by up to 90% or more. I would also suggest taking a look at the use of force policy. There are some things that can be updated, such as including attempts to de-escalate when possible, and then more clearly articulating appropriate responses to force. This is in line with some major police think tank guidelines, and I think the 8 Can't Wait initiative as well. Another big thing that came up was, you know, how to prevent problematic officers. So there was a study where they said, you know, just to become a truism among police chiefs, that 10% of their officers cause 90% of the problem. So there's this, you know, very small group that tends to have the issues. So how can we look at that small group and prevent any types of issues from occurring? So one thing is expanding what already is existing in TPD, which is the early intervention program. Early intervention programs have been found to reduce police misconduct by 50% or more on average in Pittsburgh, Minneapolis, New Orleans, and others. And I would suggest expanding this program to include additional data. So more data will make it hopefully more efficient, more effective, and then expanding the reference period back to 2 years. That way there's just a larger window of time that we can look at, and ideally, you know, just make this a little bit more effective. And then the plan with this program is they identify officers before any serious, you know, issues occur through, you know, interventions and training. Additionally, to not hire officers with a history of misconduct. This has been taking place in other cities across the country. And it is just, I believe, will be one of those things that will help reduce problematic officers in the future. With respect to technology and social media, I think this one's pretty clear cut. People like social media. They like being able to know what's going on, to feel informed, interact, connect, and to feel alerted when something they need to know is happening. These have all been shown through prior research to increase trust, legitimacy, and satisfaction with police. So I would recommend, you know, communicating more regularly, all of these different and incidents that may occur, sharing truth, not necessarily spin, you know, the authenticity, and then having communications with citizens. I think all of those things will be very beneficial. Moving on to community policing and crime reduction, reinstituting a through and through community policing model will be very beneficial. We can do this through increasing non-enforcement interaction between officers in the community. There are different programs such as Cops Out of Cars, where officers can get out of their car, be with the community members, be on foot or bicycle patrol, just getting to know the members of the community, but not necessarily in an enforcement capacity. Also, changing evaluation metrics to emphasize and reward actions supportive of community policing, such as adding community contacts to activity logs. So that's a metric we want to know. How many times did you go and talk to members of the community? And by doing this, we're incentivizing these types of behaviors. Furthermore, documenting and policy, a philosophy of police restraint whenever possible. So, that what I mentioned before, just being able to de-escalate, and also a philosophy where protesters can safely and legally express their First Amendment rights. There are a few sub-bullets on this, just amending policy regarding crowd management to address responses to different types of events, making sure that supervisors complete an after-action report to the chief if there's any enforcement that follows, and any no-knock warrants must be used only when a clearly stated exigent circumstances exists and it's approved by the chief of police. Further, I think it's important just to incentivize hires from the community because they already have built trust and they know people in the community. So to increase diversity and those bonds, we can incentivize it through increasing scholarships, sponsored academies, and recruiting people from the neighborhoods that we also want to patrol. That has been shown in past research, of course, to increase trust and perceptions of legitimacy in police. Furthermore, just expanding out what programs exist into this, philosophy of community building and relationships, and interaction and understanding with the community. Things that are already being done, all of these are things I believe are occurring with TPD, such as police athletic leagues, junior police academies, listening events such as front porch roll call, community cookouts. These are happening. They just may not be happening in every single neighborhood, or people may not know about it because of social media. So I think these are all ways that these pillars combine and we can help build upon each other to help just make a culture of this policing philosophy. Also exploring alternatives to arrest programs. TPD has already been leading in terms of expanding the use of citations in lieu of arrests, but there are similar programs or just expanding it to other things. So we can help divert people before they get involved in the system. A great idea that a community member raised was reverse ride-alongs. So having officers go out and spend the day with community members, just like we would recommend, you know, community members go spend the day with officers, which I believe is my next recommendation. Increasing opportunities for Citizens Academy and the ride-along program. And actually, both of those have been shown to increase perceptions of legitimacy and trust in police. I also think they're just a great experience. People enjoy doing them. I assign it to my students to do in my classes. So I've always found it to be really beneficial, and the research supports this benefit. All right, I think I'm getting short on time, so I'm going to try to move these next ones along. In terms of training and education, implementing effective, high-quality, evidence-based training is essential. One of the ones I recommended is implementing use of force or de-escalation training, and then adding de-escalation items to all reports, and as I mentioned before, the TPD SOP on use of force. This will help us to reduce complaints and officer use of force. That's based on ongoing research on the ICAT model, which is a model recommended by a major policing think tank. We also can track by, you know, logging de-escalation, we can track the use of it over time. And we can also use that to reinforce this training and practice. So by asking officers, how often did you use de-escalation? Did you use it today? It'll just show, like, this is not just a training. It's something that we're infusing into the culture. It's something we want you thinking about every day, every time you fill out a report. Another suggestion would be to do a follow-up study on the effects of this model, just to, again, make sure that these things are working as we intended. Furthermore, I'm reinforcing trainings through internal and external culture. I've touched on this throughout, but I think if we, you know, want people to do these things, we have to incentivize them regarding the trainings that we're implementing, regarding community-oriented policing, and just making sure we're promoting people who do this, incentivizing officers, and rewarding them when they do show these behaviors. All right, my last finding is regarding funding and resources for police. And here it just resoundingly sounded that a co-response model for mental health and social welfare calls would be not only something that would alleviate a burden that's currently on the police department, but it would also help reduce arrests based on prior research. And it would also help just increase that understanding and response to people who are in different situations. So one thing is a co-response model where mental health experts and social workers respond out to these calls that are likely mental health related or social welfare related. Prior research has shown that when that occurs, the average arrest is less than 7% compared to, you know, three times higher when you just have a standard police response model. So that makes me think this is a win-win, you know, in terms of all the different elements for the citizens, for the police who, you know, are having other experts responding to these, but also for the mental health workers and social welfare social workers who are responding out to have a police officer with them, because you really don't know when something could potentially change and it could go from nonviolent to a violent situation.
That's USF Associate Criminology Professor Dr. Brianna Fox talking about the Tampa Mayor's Community Task Force on Policing and some of the results. They were unveiled on Saturday. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan, host of the WMNF Midpoint Monday. It's 12:44 in the afternoon. And you heard some of the results there from Dr. Fox. She said that police should make data available, that police should be accountable, that perhaps body-worn cameras and a policy on those cameras would be good, and to look at the use of force policy, also police restraint and co-response with social service agencies. So what do you think about those types of recommendations? We'll take your calls after this last segment to tell us what you think about the results. Let me give out the number now, even though we'll not take the calls until after this next segment. 813-239-9663 is where you can call. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. And you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Our last segment here is a reaction to the survey results from Tampa Mayor Jane Castor. So here's what Mayor Castor had to say about these results.
And Sean, we're going to take a break because those files haven't loaded, but we're going to take a break and be right back. If you want to just remind listeners what they've been hearing, yep. That would be helpful.
Sure thing. So that was we've been hearing from USF Associate Criminology Professor Dr. Brianna Fox. In the last half hour or so, we heard her talking about the Tampa Mayor's Community Task Force on Policing and some of the results that she found. They were unveiled on Saturday, and let me read. I'll read this email as well that came in. Kelly wrote, a couple of things really resonated with me when the associate professor was providing the results from the recent study. As someone who lives in our area where outside entities are causing damage to our neighborhood, namely Trinity Cafe attracting hundreds of chronically homeless to our area, I can honestly say that our residents do not know who patrols our neighborhood. We've made outreach attempts in the past to host roll calls to help bridge this gap, but it seems like the officers assigned to our sector are always changing and getting moved to other districts. This means that patrolling officers do not know our neighborhood as well as we do. So that's part of an email from Kelly out there, and if you have a response to that, you can call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. Rob, do we have the mayor's sound yet?
We're still trying to bring it up.
Okay, it's in an email I sent you earlier. If that's helpful, I'll try to resend that right now. It's the fifth one here in the one I'm sending. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, and we're going to hear from the mayor of Tampa in just a second. And we have been hearing from USF Associate Criminology Professor Dr. Brianna Fox. And I want to know what you found what you thought about that. That did you agree with what the community had said about the Tampa police? What's been your experience with the Tampa police, or if you are not in Tampa, with your police in your community? You can give us a call at 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org.
All right, Sean, I think we're ready to go.
All right, thanks so much, Rob.
These meetings have really been critical, I believe, for us moving forward into the future with the type of law enforcement that the community wants to see here in Tampa. So I thank all of you for your time and effort at crafting these steps that can be taken to, again, improve, because the police department is only as strong as that relationship with the community. So again, thank you to Dr. Brianna Fox and her team of graduate students. I know that this was not an easy lift. There's no doubt about that. Being able to condense all of these thoughts and shared experiences down into these findings and presenting them today was a monumental task. So I thank each and every one of you. I'm very, very excited about the findings that were presented today. I took a number of notes. It's clear that, as Dr. Fox said, the team listened to the concerns of the community and also listened to the officers and their input as well. And that really is, with that collaboration, is how we are going to build the law enforcement department organization that the community wants and deserves to keep our city safe. So I want to go over, I took some copious notes. So I am actually participated in the president's 21st century policing task force on policing. So I'm glad that was used as a platform. And a lot of these as we have seen historically, the recommendations, you start to hear and see these patterns. So I think that is important, but also the unique contributions of the city of Tampa and what we want our department to look like. So with the trust and legitimacy, first and foremost with that is the transparency. It is incredibly important. I often talk about Sir Robert Peel's principles of policing, and those were actually authored back in the 1800s, but they still ring true today. And I believe I have mentioned these in other statements that I have provided. But the most important ones are that law enforcement exists to serve the community. Law enforcement, the police are the community, and the community are the police as well. And it has to, you have to have that partnership and that collaboration in order to ensure that that our community is free of disorder and crime. And also another very important principle that he has, our states, is that the absence of disorder in crime while having the absence of enforcement by the police is really where you're going to find that success. And so we can translate that down into being able to lower crime in our community with fewer arrests and with that partnership and that collaboration with the community. Policy and oversight are critical for accountability, and accountability is critical for any successful relationship. The body-worn cameras were mentioned. That is one of the best agents for transparency, and we are currently implementing those. As Dr. Fox also stated, what's important with the body-worn cameras is also the policy. And many of you may be aware that I worked after retirement for a short time with the Miami Police Department. And they spent 3 years in really crafting and honing their policy on body-worn cameras. And so we need that input from the community as well on that policy and on those procedures that deal with body-worn cameras. And then the use of force or response to resistance is very, very important. And the de-escalation component of it, you know, with the procedural justice, looking at the open communication, the explanation of why certain steps are being taken, you know, those are very, very important. Having that mutual trust and being responsive to community concerns. Police officers should be enforcing those standards that the community expects and communicates to law enforcement. Again, another critical reason for that relationship moving forward. But de-escalation is very important. As we have seen around the nation, quite often law enforcement and interactions with the community get to that point where there is some type of use of deadly force. And what we're looking for with the procedural justice and the de-escalation components is to stop that prior to escalating to that point where deadly force is being used. And that is very, very important. Another element that Dr. Fox brought up was the evidence-based. We have to look at the best practices that we can implement here in our organization. And they have to be evidence-based with policies, with training and also with the actions of the officers out on the street. The communication, the social media, being able to communicate with the public what the police department is doing and why they're doing that. As Dr. Fox also said, that quite often in our small groups, breakout groups, there would be a recommendation to initiate certain types of programs with the community, only to have the police department say, well, we already do that. Well, that is, you know, that's on us. That's on the mayor's office and on the police department for not communicating that fully with the city and with our residents. So
Well, that was Tampa Mayor Jane Castor speaking on Saturday. That was part of her reaction to the results of the Community Task Force on Policing and a survey of USF students, Tampa residents, and Tampa police officers. We heard those results. We've heard from Mayor Castor. What do you think? We heard the results of the survey that from the USF Associate Professor of Criminology, Dr. Brianna Fox. Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. You're listening to Midpoint Monday on WMNF Tampa. It's 12:55 in the afternoon. We have Lamar in Mulberry on the line. Hi, Lamar. What do you think about what you've heard?
Yes, I think one of the issues is I'm in construction, and I go around to a lot of the different projects around the Tampa Bay area and all over throughout the state of Florida. And you'll notice that you see police officers living in one jurisdiction and patrolling another area. For example, every evening on the Polk Parkway, I see three or four Tampa PD officers heading toward Polk County coming from Tampa. You know, and if you're living in Winter Haven or Lakeland in Polk County, but you're patrolling, you know, Seminole Heights or some of the neighborhoods of Tampa, you really don't have a connection to the community because you're living in one place and you're patrolling another area.
That is something I've heard a lot recently, and I think it makes a big difference. I think that people would police differently if it's their own community that they're policing rather than just some place where they work 9 to 5 or whatever the hours are. I'm not saying the hours are 9 to 5, but just some place where they come in, they leave, and then they don't really care. I don't want to sound judgmental, but it seems like there would be a lot more heart in it if it was your own community. And I think that's
exactly
what you're getting at, right?
Exactly. If you look by, you know, I know it's fictional, but if you look by the relationship that Andy Taylor had with the citizens of Mayberry, because he lived in the community. He knew which ones caused trouble. He knew who did what. And when you build that bond between the law enforcement and the people they're there to serve and protect, I think it would build a better bond and a better trust between the two.
All right, Lamar, that's an excellent point. I really appreciate you bringing that in to us from Mulberry. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. And if you'd like to join this conversation, the number is 813-239-9663. We have Rob in Sonoda Sassa. Hi, Rob. What would you like to say?
Hey, good show. I was glad to hear that report. Yeah, I think de-escalation is super important. A friend of mine had an interesting observation a few days ago. He said that, you know, if you could train officers, and we were talking about the Kenosha incident, you know, to have maybe a little higher level of hand-to-hand training, you know, like maybe even like martial arts training, and I'm not sure what they get as part of their training, but, you know, it seemed like they had the guy in hand, and I heard they tased him twice, but there were several officers. I mean, I don't know why three officers can't subdue a man who's not armed, you know. Maybe they don't want to get in close quarters. They don't want to get punched in the face. Who does? Maybe they don't want to get in a scrap. Okay, but that would be preferable to, you know, having to go to a deadly force potential. So that would be one thing I would say. And also, I mean, they don't like to use nightsticks anymore because they say they're brutal. But it's better to have a busted kneecap than being shot, you know. And, I mean, once you don't comply with the officer's requests many times and you struggle and you're reaching in a car, I think that was unfortunate. And I don't think the cop did the right thing. But on the other hand, the guy's already shown he does not want to be arrested, you know, for whatever reason. And if you're reaching in your car, well, it could be a knife, you know, it could be a gun, or it could be nothing. But, you know, it puts the cop in a difficult situation. And again, compliance is the second thing I wanted to point out. You know, I have had my friends, many of whom are musicians, and when we were younger especially, most of us have had an incident with a police officer, been arrested for a DUI or something comparable. And, you know, the idea of struggling with the officer is absurd. I mean, no one I've known personally has ever been in a violent confrontation with a cop, because everybody I know does what they tell you to do. Yes, sir. No, sir. You know, and there it is. And most of the incidents you see where you have a deadly outcome, I mean, not all, but many, there's a compliance issue. So don't fight cops. Don't grab for their weapons. Don't grab for their tasers or anything else, because, you know, you're setting yourself up for a situation where you're going to lose one way or the other.
And, you know, Rob, every time there's a situation where a person was shot and then people say, hey, don't resist the cops or whatever, or comply, every time that happens, there's a series of videos that go out on the internet that show where there were white men who fought the cops and who, you know, tried to pull away from them and wrestle them and all sorts of things that say, mm-hmm. and they told us just to comply. Or it'll show a series of black men who were complying and then still got shot or killed. So
I understand that. You know, I wonder how many, I haven't seen any statistics about white men who didn't comply and are somehow shot, you know, and maybe there are none, but there must be some, but it seems like those don't get covered. I'm just curious what the statistical thing would be, you know.
Yeah, so thanks so much for calling in, Rob, and Thanota Sassa. I appreciate you calling in. I do have to end the show right now, and I apologize to Doug in Clearwater for calling in, and I'm not going to be able to get to you. But I do want to thank Rob Lori, DP, and Frank Knox for their help on the show today. I'm Sean Canan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. And if you'd like to watch this, the Community Policing Task Force report, I will put it up on our website, WMNF.org, later today. Stay tuned now for Latino 54. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. I want to thank everyone for listening to Midpoint Monday on WMNF Tampa.